Gemma. So there is a question about the personal effort required to find the divine, its intensity, and all kinds of ways and means. And I would add to it that is it really personal effort that ultimately leads you to the divine? Because the Shruti also says that na yam atma pravachane na medhana bahuna shrutena yam veshe vranute tena labhyas tasyeshe atma vivranute tanuswa. Meaning thereby, this self is not one, W-O-N. It's not one by either ascesis or by intellect, by any of these things. It says it is only when the self chooses to reveal itself that it reveals its own body. And this is so true. If you really look at the life of many of these great ones, ultimately they end up with the revelation. The last point is by the grace, even where it is unacknowledged. That's how Sri Aurobindo would tell us. So some take this approach. Two extreme approaches people take. One is that it's personal effort. So in that personal effort, they include everything, which includes doing the right thing, not only with regard to the practice of sadhana, but also in your actions. Daily you must, your life should be led in a good way, in a pure way, in a right way. At the same time, you must put the effort with regard to finding the divine, which may be things like concentration, meditation, bhakti, seva. Some put an extreme importance on this. Sri Aurobindo says that, well, the spiritual life is full of such conversions which would scandalize. For example, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's two disciples, Jagai and Madhai, Saint Augustine, or Saul of Tarsius, so Valmiki. So how these people got converted if it was only about personal effort? So personal effort in their own life, if you see, their life was a totally a different life. And even after turning to the divine, someone like Saint Augustine, he continued for a long time his difficulties and challenges. So what really matters? This question has been raised even in the with regard to the Gita, that why Arjun was regarded as an adhikari of the Gita. So here we see that while personal effort is done and it has its own place, there is the other dimension, and some people lean exclusively on that. They say, no, it is a question of divine will. Call it grace, call it whatever, the divine decides. And why he decides, it seems outwardly it's not necessary that the number of hours you spend in meditation or the number of right deeds in your checklist, good deeds you have done, based on that the divine reveals himself. And it's understandable because he is not a super mathematician. In fact, he would be very boring if he was a mathematician. He had nothing else except like an accountant, he is seeing, judging people based on that. Okay, now your account has so much, there I reveal myself. Then you don't need a divine. Because divine should act in freedom. He should not act according to just human logic and human calculation. So this is the big challenge. So there are people who take this other approach, that grace will reveal whenever it wants to reveal and we don't have to put any personal effort. But if you look at the thing from the depth, grace obviously comes first, because without the touch of grace, one will not feel inspired to move one step towards the divine. First thing is that. That's how Sri Aurobindo says, he who chooses the infinite has been chosen by the infinite. So why Arjun is chosen, that Sri Krishna knows. And he reveals. Because Arjun himself says that I have treated you like a friend. And actually if you see, Vidur is more qualified. He is a dharma ka marmagya. He knows the essence of dharma. He is Dharma's child. Just like Yudhishthir. Yudhishthir is a righteous person. Bhishma is a dread pratigya. So there were so many, even yogis at that point of time, ascetics, so many people. But Arjun is chosen. And Sri Krishna reveals the secret. He says this secret is extends back to previous life. So there is a relation with the divine in the previous lives. And again, it's not a mathematical relation. It's a kind of choice of the soul and the divine grace. And suddenly in one life, there is a grand disclosure. So it may look like magic and miracle, but there is a whole history which we have forgotten, but the divine remembers. So sometimes we may see a person who is rolling in the mud and mire, but preparing for the great bath. Because his rolling in the mud and mire was just a kind of exhaustion of certain tendencies, which we see, for example, in the life of Buddha. Buddha's life, before he has turned to this greater seeking, we know he was a good person, nice sattvic person, as far as we know about him. But his life was like any other life outwardly, living in all luxury and everything. And suddenly there is a conversion in him. So grace comes first. It touches something deep within. And grace sees that something deep within. Meaning thereby that we human beings live on three layers at least. One is the outer layer where we see people's actions. Karma. People often say that, you know, according to karma your life runs. But life does not run according to karma, but according to dharma. So what is dharma and karma? We recently had a big debate on this going on wherever I had been. So very simple. Karma is all that goes out from us. Action, which implies thought, feelings, physical actions, mechanical actions, everything that goes out of us. And dharma is the basis of the action. So why I am doing what I am doing, except for the divine and my own sincerity, nobody is a privy to that. So dharma is the basis. And while human beings see the karma, the divine sees the dharma or the adharma. One may be doing many good deeds, but with adharma in the background. A doctor may be, you know, healing a lot of patients, but his eye may be on the pocket, or the size of the pocket. He may be deviating from dharma by giving more importance or greater preference to those who can pay more. He is still doing his right job, but there may be this inside, it must be maybe the desired self which is driven. Outwardly, he is doing everything right according to the rule book. So karma is there, but dharma is not there, because desire and dharma don't go together unless desire is under a sattvic control. Meaning thereby, I will whatever desire is according to sattvic control means, as the Gita says, eating the leftover. It sounds very strange. The person eats the leftover of whatever is offered to the divine. That's how the law of sacrifice means he will give and something will come to him. He is not wanting, he is not grasping. Something will come. That something may be little, that something may be more. And he receives it. He doesn't do the chesta ki, I must eat. His effort should be in giving. So that's how, you know, desires become purified. So first is karma and dharma. This is about effort. Now a time comes when suddenly a human being realizes that this frame within which I am living is not enough, and he begins to look upward. That's when personal effort towards divine begins in the true sense. And it's not that something bad has to happen. Better that everything is fine and yet he feels the need. Now comes personal effort after that, the proper personal effort. So if we look very closely and analyze, nothing in our life is an exclusively personal effort. The inspiration comes from nature. I am talking, using the word nature in the vastest sense. All nature, forces of nature, powers of nature above. So inspiration comes from nature. The instruments have been built by nature. So even in ordinary life, what we call as personal effort is nothing but the ego's appropriating something and calling it its own. So you must be very clear. That's why in the Gita, the first thing is to realize, apart from nishkam karma, that I am not the doer. Nature is the doer. If I say, oh, I have succeeded in an exam, well, you got the intelligence from where? Whether you call it force of heredity or whatever, this intelligence is a gift. Some people do not have that gift. Who gave you the gift? That gift has come from nature. So now, once the divine touches the soul, the nature's machinery begins to operate. So what does it do? It creates life situations, circumstances in a way. The gods of destiny and karma, to put it that way, the lords of time, they know that you have been touched. So, you know, life begins to take that change outwardly, pushing you and compelling you to turn within. That's why sometimes when people turn toward the divine, it is said that an avalanche of troubles fall upon them. people don't understand it. They think, ye kya kiya re duniya wale? Why me? But why you? Because you have been chosen. And the beauty is, you cannot refuse that choice. Your outer being may run away, try to run away from divine. But your soul will never accept it. Because it has been touched. So whatever be the difficulty, the outer situation will help you inside. At the same time, automatically the concentration will begin to turn more and more toward the divine. You can't, one can't, that's why these things cannot be taught mechanically. Sit down, concentrate, do this posture, that posture, turn toward the divine. You can do all that, but actually it doesn't happen like that. It happens naturally, organically, as to use modern language. But yet it looks as if I am doing the effort. Why? Partly because it gives you joy. Mother says that when she was asked, why aspiration? Ultimately God has decided, why do you want to aspire? So this effort is a preparation for the grand event. Firstly, when we go, supposing Pondicherry suddenly appeared before us. Today I was just sharing with someone that, you know, oh, I wish sometimes I have this urge to go to Himalayas, and I wish, you know, I could just step out of my room and there is a space, they use the word time warp, but there is a possibility through space that I enter into a Himalayan gorge immediately. And if that possibility was there, it would be so wonderful. Then the person rightly said, if you do that to seek isolation, if that gorge is readily available for everyone, then everybody would be there and it will be crowded there with chips and Coca-Cola. I said, yeah, the Himalayan gorge has to be found inside. That mother says, and I understand, but when you want that kind of, you know, to be in solitude. Nevertheless, the urge for seeking solitude, why does it come? Who has impelled? Can I say I want to seek solitude, therefore I must seek solitude? No. This want will come inside. So why aspiration? Mother says, because then when you have this joy, when you meet, if suddenly something happened in front, like as I said, the Himalayan gods, or God appearing suddenly in front. That is the difference between Duryodhan and Arjun. Unasked for divine is not welcome. With Arjun also it seems unasked, but he has actually asked him for guidance, and then suddenly he disclosed. He has already decided to disclose. So therefore we must put in effort to prepare ourselves for the meeting. And this is a process. As you said, intensity, it builds over a period of time. It doesn't come by wanting to do it. For instance, it has been said that 3 days, if you put in effort, day and night, and mother has testified to this. Shurbindo, actually 3 days he had the nirvana, and Sri Ramakrishna has spoken about it. So we have very clear cut 3 examples. But the problem is, I know people who have tried it. I mean, I myself have tried it. But it doesn't work like that, because you can't build that intensity. And why you are unable to build it, if you go closely, there is a reason. There are things to be prepared in nature. If suddenly, it's not a mechanical thing, it happens and you have the grand disclosures, it won't work out. So very often divine is seen to play very paradoxical games. And Shubhendu speaks of that in Thoughts and Aphorism, that Krishna deceived me again, he tricked me again, I fell into sin. He speaks like Shubhendu's language, that something you don't want to do and you end up doing, and then you come out. But Krishna is leading you, preparing your nature, reckoning you with all the parts of your nature, purifying them, cleansing them. And then slowly a time comes when they are so ready that you just say, come, and he comes. And then he doesn't leave. He is there forever. So this intensity builds up over a period of time so that we are ready and prepared. Ultimately it is grace. Grace working at the initiation, grace working from behind, pushing us to effort. And this effort is not just a concession that human beings should feel happy. That's one part. Because if you tell people, just, I have seen so many times, I tell people, take mother's name and, you know, this is all devotional. Now, how to explain? It works. It's the only magic. If you really want to know a magic, this is the magic. Mother and Sri Aurobindo have spoken about it. They knew what they are saying. Great ones have spoken about it, that the name of God is greater than a mantra. And why? Because mantra is supposed to lead you to God's feet. Mantra's effect is to bring the deity closer to you. But name is the deity. Name and form. So God's name is something wonderful. But it's so difficult. Something will come in the mind, something will stop, distract. But a time comes when all this which seems far begins to become natural. Organically that intensity grows. Then everything pushes us towards that. You're like, I was just sharing this experience on the airport landing, and you know, you're waiting and suddenly there is, you see all these vehicles, you know, America has only cars and airplanes. Airplanes. So you see all these cars going in, massive structure, superstructure, everything is all regulated, mechanical, and I suddenly feel that where is love? So I feel it is missing. And I shared this with some people. I said, you know what is missing here? It is love. Because everything is, you are in a comfort zone. Everything is served to you. I'm not talking of the Indians have brought soul to America, just as the blacks, I'm using the term in the right way, brought emotions with all their flaws. But Indians brought the soul to America. How much it is awakened, I don't know. But where is love? Then suddenly I have another experience. As I am going through, and even airports and everywhere, I am feeling this become such a machine. It's like I am experiencing a giant machine in which the soul is trapped. It doesn't realize it is trapped. And it's so different. And I remember when I landed up in Chennai, just sharing this experience. So I had to rush. 1 hour you have to, you know, all the process, no? Immigration, then Delhi airport, then take a domestic flight, pick up your baggage, drop it at the domestic, rush through security for you. 1 hour, 15 minutes, and I told all of them, funny ways, rush hour. So, when I entered the lift rushing through, there was another lady who also entered the lift rushing through. And she says, ah, thank God, you know, it's India. I said, yeah, absolutely. And she said, what? She made a very interesting remark. This is a one moment conversation. We are just going from one level to another. So she says, oh, this chaos, and I love it. I said, yes, because here you can find the divine. You feel the need of the divine. They just shot, and she also smiled, and I also smiled, as if we understood each other perfectly. That chaos was so lovely. Found my mind strange. After all, you want life to be organized. You don't expect, you know, a man of 60 to run with the trolley, and you know, he has to catch and jump the queue and go through every possible hurdle race to go to the immigration first and everything. And at the end of the day, you realize that, you know, India is made for, it is living. Because when you make life too organized, and there's too much money, and there is pleasure, objects of the pleasure, then basically you have created a hell of pleasures. This is what Sri Aurobindo says. And your soul is trapped. You don't even feel the need, the urge. But here everything comes alive, you know, because there's that immense freedom in which trees grow naturally, wildly, nobody is there to prune them. Cats and dogs will go wherever they feel like. Suddenly you may have a visitation from a Nagraj. A man may suddenly shout at you, somebody may just, you know, smile at you. This organic growth of life. So the point is that this practice of that we do toward the divine, it should also be not, Mother says, when you try to too much systematize it, Sri Aurobindo also says, codify it, then you lose the living soul. It's not a mechanical, after all, you're meeting whom? Your beloved. Have a heart. You can't be sitting bolt straight every day 2 hours and saying, I have done my duty. Oh, beloved, come. When you're meeting a beloved, wherever you are going, you feel the need of the beloved. That was the third experience. Everywhere you're feeling need of the mother. And morning, evening, and ma, ma, ma. So because That's how. It's not the number of hours one sits in meditation or does a certain kriya. So this intensity builds through the experiences of life, and inwardly one goes through all the ups and downs, and then a time comes when we are ready. And then he says, here I come. Then you can't, you are no more. I won't even say you are no more yourself. You are no more. You are dead guy. So this is the process. Personal effort, grace, and you realize that everything was a grace. And till you realize it, you have to take it as a faith that everything is a grace. But do whatever effort comes naturally. If somebody has read something, feels drawn, it doesn't matter. It's not how many, as I said, whether you are sitting in meditation, doing seva, you may do anything. Divine is seeing the dharma inside your heart. You may go work 8 hours in ashram, but you may be eyeing for a chair. He knows what's going on inside. That thing is should be very clear. You can't deceive the divine. You can deceive everybody, but you can't deceive the divine. So you see this all through our literature, and he may give you many side dishes because he has to also, you are doing so much meditation or so much this thing, some powers may come here and there, but you won't get him. The last act is an act of complete self-forgetfulness, utter abandon. It's an act of love in which all measures drop, all methods go away. What method is there to remember somebody you love? It's natural. So while one should do what one should do and what one is moved to do, there is no standard set method or technique. One must remember behind all this is grace, and the grace will reveal when it has to reveal. So there should not be too much, mother says, too much intensity in the effort, always too much will to do good. She says it becomes a veil because it's me. I must do the effort. Oh, I didn't do this. Oh, I didn't do so many mantras I had to do today. So that brings egoism in the effort, that becomes a veil. Always wanting to do the right thing. She says it becomes almost as bad as a bad will. Because we have our own idea of right thing. And it causes strain on the being. So all this is the total account. And as I said, do what one would, one must do, whatever little personal effort, whatever way one feels to each one, one's own challenges and methods. But ultimately, so janahi jin ram janahi. He whom the divine chooses, he chooses. He tears the veil, reveals himself. And why he does so is revealed to us at the great end of the journey. You won't know why. And others will never know why, because their criteria is different. But you will know when you have touched that point where he reveals, then you, many things are revealed to you. What your relations in the past may have been with the divine, why this ahetuki kripa is there. But until then, one is just floating in an ocean, not knowing what is supporting you through the waves. Maybe the island where you will meet him is just next door and very close, but not appearing because the waves are turning you topsy-turvy. So with faith one has to go. 4 lines from Savitri, where Shubhendu speaks of this. A date is fixed in the calendar of the Supreme. An anniversary of the birth sublime. That birth, why we have entered into this limited world. An anniversary of the birth sublime. Our souls shall justify its checkered walk. All shall come near that now is not or far. After we have served this great divided world, God's bliss and oneness are our inborn right. So, and the lines before that are also very beautiful. When nothing we can see but drift and bail, a mighty guidance. Now I remember them, just because, secret knowledge. One who has saved this world is ever its Lord. Our errors are his steps upon the way. He works through the fears, vicissitudes of our lives. He works through the hard breath of battle and toil. He works through our sins, our sorrows and our tears. Whatever the appearance, we must bear. His His omniscience rules our nescience. We don't know, but he rules. Whatever the appearance, we must bear when nothing, whatever our present ills and adverse fate, when nothing we can see but drift and bail, a mighty guidance leads us still through all. This guidance is grace. His knowledge overrules our nescience. We don't know. We don't even know what is the effort. We have just read books and heard from standardized literature. This all, man has devised so many systems and methods and trapped even divine into that if you do this mantra so many times, this goddess will be pleased. If you do some other, this goddess will be pleased. And then she will grant you this boon. Is she a machine? Automated teller machine. Do this based on your credit score. Money out. No. She works in infinite freedom. So that's why surrender, surrender, surrender. Surrender to the grace, while whatever we have to do, we should do. When the time comes, it will come. It will happen. Ichema.